from deep inside your radio.
So much to get to today, ladies and gentlemen. So much to get to. And where did it go? Oh, yes. The U.S. military invaded Iraq without a formal plan for occupying and stabilizing the country, and this high-level failure continues to undercut a mediocre army effort there, according to liberal media. No, according to an army historian and strategist. Isn't that wild? Isn't that an interesting twist? There was no Phase 4 plan for occupying Iraq after the combat phase, writes Major Isaiah Wilson, who served as an official historian of the campaign and later as a war planner in Iraq. A variety of government offices had considered the possible situations that would follow a U.S. victory, he writes. No one produced an actual document laying out a strategy for victory after major combat. The United States, its army, and its coalition of the willing have been playing catch-up ever since, he says, of the subsequent chaos. A copy of Wilson's study is presented at Cornell University in October. Hey, that was during the election campaign. Has now been obtained by the Washington Post. The Bush administration is facing a wave of new allegations that the abuse of foreign detainees in U.S. military custody was more widespread, varied, and grave in the past 3 years than Defense Department allegations or admissions. New documents released this week detail a series of probes by Army criminal investigators into multiple cases of threatened executions of Iraqi detainees, as well as thefts of currency and other private property, physical assaults, and deadly shootings of detainees in Iraq. Army commanders chose non-criminal punishments for those involved in the abuse, or the investigations were so flawed that prosecutions could not go forward. Yasser Arafat invested $1.3 million in a company that owns a string of American bowling alleys popular with Jewish teenagers. For those of you who haven't gotten enough irony over the holiday weekend, the Scottish Army commanders have expressed fears that the anti-Iraq war movement is discouraging thousands of young men from considering a career in the armed forces. That's right. It's the war's fault. And Secretary of State Colin Powell told President Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair last month there were too few troops in Iraq. Wild, isn't it? Ladies and gentlemen, this is a year in which Zell Miller's anger was judged by the establishment to be more benign than Howard Dean's. This is the year in rebuke.
Live from New Hampshire State University, this is an ABC News special. Covering The Scream, a town meeting about the media and Howard Dean's concession speech. Now, from Sununu Hall, Ted Koppel.
It has been, as one wag observed, the most played piece of videotape since the Britney Madonna kiss, and much less sexy. It is, of course, the 45 seconds in which Howard Dean conceded defeat in Iowa and may have courted defeat in America. But have we in the media acted like judge, jury, and executioner in replaying the Scream video so very often? And if so, is that a bad thing? With us tonight are several practitioners of the media arts to help us sort through all of this and ourselves. From Fox News Washington, Managing Editor Britt Hume, from NBC Nightly News Anchor and Managing Editor Tom Brokaw, and from CNN News Night Anchor and maybe even Managing Editor of it too, Aaron Brown. Gentlemen, welcome. Britt Hume, you co-moderated the last debate up here. How do you assess the tape's effect on your role?
Ted, I'd never co-moderated before, so that's most of what was going on in my mind going into the debate. But I can't tell you how many people I ran into in the airport and here on the ground in New Hampshire who, when they heard I was going to moderate or co-moderate the debate, they'd just rear back and say, "Yeah!" What we've now come to know is the Howard Dean style. So, from just the standpoint of, you might say, branding the man, I think it's been pretty powerful.
Tom, we talk of a Muskie moment, that scene on a cold New Hampshire night when Ed Muskie responded to what he interpreted as an attack on his wife and broke down in tears. Mm-hmm. Was this a Muskie moment?
Not a Muskie moment, but not a Reagan moment either. You know, that electrifying moment when Ronald Reagan broke an impasse in the debate up here by saying, I paid for this loudspeaker. You know, we spent a lot of time in my shop going over the ground rules for repeating the tape, because otherwise, I mean, you think you've seen it a lot.
Pardon me, a what, that, Tom?
A lot. Lots of times.
Oh, right.
I mean, I fought very hard, Ted, for the 3 and 5 rule.
Just for our audience, explain, Tom, if you will, the 3 and 5 rule.
Well, you can't rerun the Dean footage more than 3 times in any 5-minute period on the network. On MSNBC, of course, it's 7 and 5.
Aaron Brown, get into this if you like.
Ted, a pleasure, sir, to renew an old mentorship.
Oh, you're too kind.
You know, the cliche is that in the 24-hour news cycle, anything gets rerun a million times. But, you know, that's not really true. More often than not, the pieces of videotape that start making dents in our brains are ones that tell a story. In this case, you didn't need to know anything about the war or the economy or the environment to get the story of this footage. All you needed to know was that the guy was reciting the names of the states, and he looked like Joe Cocker off his medication.
You know, one of the ironies implicit in all this is that Joe Cocker's going to outlive us all. But, Britt Hume, if you may, bring us back around to the iconic nature of this tape. It somewhat got folded into this storyline about Howard Dean being angry, didn't it?
Yes, it did, Ted, but the conventional wisdom about that is 100% wrong. Yes, Howard Dean was smiling during the tape, but he'd gotten angry at the media before he lost, so you could just imagine what he was feeling now, and it's no news that when you bottle up things like that, it surfaces in goofy ways. Then, of course, when we do run the tape, he really is angry. That says, aha, there's not only smoke here, but as President Bush might have put it, there's evidence of fire-related program activities.
So this is the larger truth we're telling about a man's meta-anger?
Ted, I don't know whether it tells a larger truth, but it's definitely taking our business someplace new. We used to show you tapes of things that you didn't already know. Now we show them to you because you already do know them. We're playing the hits. We haven't become local news. We've become top 40 radio.
Aaron, run that ball a little further downfield, if you might. Have we just contributed to making public figures a little bit more paranoid about committing spontaneous behavior?
Ted, it is so hard to give you a categorical answer to that question, so let me skip the omelet and just give you a couple of eggs.
Please.
I think it all depends on the job of the public figure. If it's somebody trying to get elected, yes, I think they'll think twice about not thinking twice. But you can't help imagining that to the people who just like to be famous, here's a way to get on TV a lot, act stupidly in a confined, well-lit public place.
Tom, you come from Nebraska, part of the country much like Iowa.
Well,
at least in terms of the ratio of people to hogs.
Well,
take us back, if you would, to where we started here.
Which was?
Did we give enough context to this tape?
Ted, I don't think we give enough context to anything except for Prilosec. I think you knew the crowd was excited and he was excited even though he lost. You know, I mean, that's context galore.
That would be the heroine of a James Bond thriller set in a newsroom.
It would indeed. Gentlemen, our audience has been sending us emails, but we are out of time. My thanks to you three for shedding some light on this week's heat. Our thanks, of course, to New Hampshire State University, home of the Duncan Deacons, for the use of the hall, and our thanks to you. The great Fred Allen once said, imitation is the sincerest form of television. What we've learned this week might be summed up in a small rewrite. Repetition is the sincerest form of television. That's our town meeting. I'm Ted Koppel. Good night.
For a transcript of tonight's town meeting, ask someone in town. This has been a presentation of ABC News. More people get their news from ABC, then give it to us.
Fundraising Eagle.
Hey, 43.
Secret Service getting a little literal with their code names.
41 doing all right.
Yeah.
Managed to scrape Paul O'Neill's road apples off my boots without too much to do.
Fella made me mad, yeah, turning on you like that.
Well,
you know, son, hate does sound like an old-timer here.
Hey, you've earned the right.
Yeah. But there used to be... a certain etiquette about these things. You know, you work for a president, you don't turn around and put out a book that cuts him off at the knees till fellas had a chance to run for re-election.
Mm-hmm.
It's a more civil way of doing things, I suppose.
Yeah, well, like Condi says when Colin Powell brings up a UN, you know, you're talking old school.
Mm. Guess so.
I think we brushed him back from the plate a little bit. You know, St. Pauli girl never could take the heat.
Who's that?
Used to call him St. Pauli girl, you know, after the beer.
Right.
But that blind man in a room full of deaf people, geez, what's he going to do next? Use the C word?
Communist?
Cripple.
Oh.
Look here, wouldn't a blind man hear the deaf people better than they could hear each other, even if they weren't deaf?
You mean because of the compensating?
Sure, the compensation.
Yeah, I suppose so. But look here, Sprout, never want to get tangled up in your business, you know that.
I appreciate that more than words can't describe.
But we...
Well, here we go. Here's 41 rewriting history before it even happens.
Well... Look, you're going to the UN for help in refining the Iraqi elections process. Think that's a fine idea.
Hey, 41, always expected we'd be doing some refining in Iraq as well as drilling.
Just wonder if you're sending the right guy to do the job is all.
The Brimster? He's as tough as nails on the head. He's been juggling Chalabi, Talabani, Sistani.
Sounds like John Gotti's law firm.
Yeah. But no, sir, the Brimster can jet in from Baghdad, go up to New York, see the coffee man.
Kofi Annan.
Make our case and still not need an Ambien until he hits the sack that night. I mean, this fella's been knocking those Iraqi heads together for almost a year now. You know, persuading those cheese eaters at the UN will be like selling candy to a baby.
Just think you've got a better man for the job. Sitting right there in Washington, doesn't need to fly in from Baghdad.
Ramadan?
Who's...
Rumsfeld.
Oh, no, sir. Colin, he's your flicking Secretary of State, 43. Yeah. Convincing Kofi Annan to let the UN do some of the heavy lifting on the election didn't right up his alley. Something very wrong with the alley.
Don't get me wrong. I agree. Colin's a good man. Who's made a good contribution to this policy, but and he himself would tell you this, we were getting word back from the cheese eaters that they thought after his speech last February, he might have used up a little bit of his credulibility. You know, the Brimster walks in there with a clean slate of hands.
Yeah, well, you've obviously got a problem with this Ayatollah Sistani wanting direct elections.
Yeah, it just so happens his folks are in the majority.
The Shiites.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Hey, you know what works for me? I haven't put a hyphen in that word. Otherwise, when I'm skimming the briefings, it just looks like somebody's using an obscenity.
Bremer's been the bad cop with the Ayatollah. Colin might be able to come in as good cop.
Yeah.
You know, getting anyone to agree that caucuses are better than elections is difficult, even in Iowa, so...
Sir, look, I know where this is going. What you really want is Lord High Jim Baker to Bigfoot in and get the credit for bringing the UN back into the game.
Not this time, Sprout. I owe Bake so big time for getting him on the debt forgiveness account. You know, he's got a legal practice to maintain. You don't do that by lunching with government financial guys in Paris.
No, you do it by lunching with corporate financial types in Houston. I know that. It's just...
Telling you, nobody at the UN blames Colin for that speech. They know he was on prompter.
401, thanks for the suggestion. I'm going to put it with all the good ideas Paul O'Neill came up with.
Hey, just saying, agree with the goal. Mm-hmm. Got to get out of Iraq before the convention or else that mission completed sign is a complete waste of money. Just think there's an argument for leaving diplomacy to the diplomats. Isn't that the same argument for leaving Iraq to the Iraqis? Don't think so, but you're in one of those moods where nobody can tell you anything. So, well, look, just be careful, 43. One thing you really don't want to have to deal with this year is Colin's book. 41, give my love to Mom and Jeb. Will do. You take good care, 41.
This is the Year in Rebuke.
Dick Cheney. Confidential. 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 It's like I said to Lynn the other night, in the secure, undisclosed kitchen. God wouldn't have created fingers if he didn't want us to point them. David Kay, whose delicate little ego couldn't stand having half his people diverted to a mission he didn't control, at least had the good grace on the way out to point his at the intelligence community. It's regrettable they do a fine job much of the time. They certainly had an enviable record of terminating competitive accounts for us during the Cold War. But operatives don't have to run for re-election. And when the blame comes down on them, most Americans don't even know who they are. So while Dr. K was using his digits as the good Lord intended, I was making a little swing through, you should pardon the expression, Europe. Europe's never been my favorite place. Not near enough hunting. Everything good's been shot centuries ago. But if we ever want a significant number of euros flowing into the Iraq account, somebody's got to do some door-to-dooring. And this secure and disclosed location was overdue for a termite workup. So I was at Vatican City for a photo op with the Holy Father. He's been a critic of our war project, but he's still a powerful moral force in the world. And he's looked up to by a preponderance of the nation's Hispanics. Tuesday, January 27th, 10:30 a.m.
And the Holy Father says that the war disturbs him greatly.
Mm-hmm. Well, we understand that, and we appreciate him not trying to prevent Italy from helping us. Tell him I know the answer to the famous question.
What famous question?
How many divisions does a pope have? But Your Holiness, let me...
He believes that even at this late date it would profit us all were the United States to walk the path of international cooperation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Listen, please tell him we understand he has to say that. It comes with the papal territory. But in all seriousness, my government did want to present the Holy Father with this token of our...
Of course, if you couldn't do something about the war, mm-hmm. getting rid of Roe versus Wade would be nice.
Really, this is really all I came to do in point of fact. I mean, my daughter's outside waiting for the group photo, so...
But seriously, mm-hmm. the Holy Father wishes to emphasize the path of peace.
Well, don't get me wrong. It's a fine path. We all admire it. Please, just have him take this and we can...
I'm sure it's been cleared by security. But
yeah.
Just to err on the side of caution, mm-hmm. what... I mean, could I...
It's a dove. A crystal dove. Symbolizes doves. There's some good hunting, those doves.
The Holy Father thanks you.
It was nothing. Buy him by the gross. The Pope's a tough old bird. Heck, you don't come out on top in Vatican politics by washing the feet of the most lepers. But I had bigger loaves and fishes to fry back at the secure and disclosed nation's capital. David Kay's audition for a book deal was making some of the natives inside the secure perimeter restless. And everybody knows I have a great combative effect. So I paid an unscheduled social call to Condoleezza Rice. Thursday, 3:27 p.m.
Mr. Vice President, it's always a pleasure to see you. What a pleasant surprise.
The pleasantries can wait, Dr. Rice. I've been hearing some chatter.
Al-Qaeda?
White House. Rumors of an epidemic following the outbreak of the David K. virus. Seems to affect the knees and the spine.
Mr. Vice President, I'm not that kind of doctor. I have a doctorate in international studies from the University of Denver.
Oh, let's cut to kidding, Dr. Rice. There is no University of Denver.
Look it up. Google me.
All right. Enough persiflage. I'm just going to beat around half of my normal complement of bushes here. We're implementing a two-track strategy immediately to wrap up the WMD account. What? You, as befits your more conventionally credible image, are going to do some interviews where you acknowledge possible discrepancies in the intelligence product pre and post.
I can live with that. Otherwise, we look silly or guilty or something. What's the other track?
I keep doing selected appearances in which I substantially adhere to Attitude 1.0, Operation We're Gonna Find Him.
Dick, you know I've always felt you were a person I could level with.
Mm.
That's not going to work. It sends mixed messages.
Condi, that's Reagan-era thinking. We're not broadcasting. We're in the age of narrowcasting. You'll be talking to your people, the Times, Post, McNeil, Lehrer, NPR crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be communicating with the rest of the country. Neat, simple, bifurcated, multiplexed.
Aren't you forgetting somebody?
Colin? He's tasked with the AIDS account for the duration of Black History Month. He's got a little budget cut to defend. He'll be fine.
Somebody is talking to the entire citizen cohort simultaneously. The president.
Mm-hmm. And he'll be taking a more nuanced approach. Directing a half sentence to each market segment, he'll say he wants to know more facts, and he'll oppose an investigation.
Credible.
There are people who are still prepared to believe that this president wants to know some facts.
No, I mean, is the whole sentence credible?
In the context of the deep reservoir of credibility we've painstakingly built up over the last 3 years, we think this is the least problematic approach.
Well, I have to say I'm relieved, Mr. Vice President. For a few moments, I thought you were going to suggest that I take the same line as you, and I have to say, you know, it's not about my professional ego. I'm a team player, as I believe I've proven.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of girls out at the University of Denver who are keeping an eye on me as kind of a role model, and I think they look to me to maintain at least a smidge of intellectual rigor. I mean, if David Kay couldn't find anything, who can? I mean, what, are we going to hire on Hans Blix as a temp through November?
Condi, you've got your integrity for the time being. Don't overuse it.
Mr. Vice President, thank you, I...
Put it in a Ziploc, Dr. Rice. I'll see you in the green room. Funny thing about government folks, when they want something bad, the way Condi lusts after Colin's position, they could be easier to pacify than a baby on brandy. End of partial diary for the end of January 2004. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential. Meanwhile, in the Democratic primaries, the field was thinning rapidly.
I feel good. I knew that I would. I feel good. I knew that I would now. So good.
Hello?
Al? Joe.
Joe. Joe, Joe, Joe. How are you?
Well, I'm out of the race, so that's a geschnacka feeling.
The what?
I feel good. So good. So good.
That's great, Joe.
Uh-huh.
You know, I remember the palpable sense of relief I felt after the Supreme Court decided the 2000 race.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, sure, I was robbed and everything, but still, there was that little part of me that said, whew.
Sure, sure. Hey, somebody on the press bus said it's a marathon and a contact sport rolled into one. Pretty good, not that I leave with a lot of good feelings about the press bus.
Now, Joe, don't let it make you bitter. You've got so much Senate service left in you. You've got a very good shot at becoming our Bob Dole. You know, loses presidential race, returns to the Senate, becomes a lion under the dome.
I appreciate that, Al. Yeah. I really do. And you know, there were some incredibly interesting moments along the way. Just last week in Tulsa, I spent 2 hours at the boat show, and It felt like I shook the hand of every fisherman south of Omaha.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I saw some of that on C-SPAN. My God, those are wonderful people.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Joe, within the confines of your Senate service, which means, yeah, you've got to be in D.C. at most 3 days a week, get out of public view for a little while. You know, do some reading. Regather yourself. Maybe grow a beard.
No thanks, Al. My beard itches like crazy. I mean, Hadassah's all right with it, but
Tipper sends her best to Hadassah.
Oh, thank
you. But look, what I'm saying is this is a great opportunity to get in touch with your inner Joe Lieberman. He's in there.
Oh, look, I know he is. I like him. We stay in touch. But, Al, I have to say I appreciate you taking my call this time.
Joe, I am so sorry about it. Well, you're talking about when I endorsed Governor Dean. You know, I feel so bad about that. My BlackBerry had a meltdown. We couldn't sync it back up to the address book in my laptop before the story leaked. And then it just seemed like, hey, you know, what can you say, department?
No, I know. I guess I kind of felt that by now someone in your organization might know my number by heart, but...
Yeah, well, of course, Chris Lehane did, but... He's long gone.
Don't get me wrong. I'm very grateful for you choosing me in 2000. Otherwise, I wouldn't have even thought about running until 2008. Mm. But it just seemed like, I don't know, a very public slap in the face at a time when I really thought our message of toughness on national security, fiscal responsibility at home with a social conscience and a values agenda was getting through.
Joe?
Hmm?
It was too long a message. With way too many prepositions. It didn't get through to me, and I'm not exactly Mr. Cut to the Chase.
Well,
and hey, as for a slap in the face, just ask Governor Dean how much help my endorsement has been. You should be thanking me. You know, the message that did get through, Joe, was you whining about being a victim, and that's not presidential.
Yeah, well, see, we had research that said that played pretty well. Okay, look, Al, you're probably right. Maybe these endorsements aren't worth the paper they're reported on, and maybe whoever wins the nomination is just buying a ticket to a 5-month shellacking by President Bush, and maybe this has all been a remarkable learning experience, and I'm going to try to convince myself that all of that is true.
Look, here's what I'm saying. Just give yourself the space to work up a couple of major speeches to give every once in a great while, you know, just to remind people you're still breathing and thinking.
Yeah.
And something about the war, maybe. It may be too late, but my second speech about the war was in July, and it was long over by then. So,
Al, I just hope we can repair what I thought was a pretty strong friendship. You know, friendship is a big part of my values agenda. What President Bush proposed doing to support marriage, we were going to put forward the same sort of thing to support friendship. I was going to announce it in Michigan today at the Dearborn YMCA.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to make a dinner speech to the Detroit World Affairs Council.
Small dinner.
Late flight to Washington State. Breakfast appearance at the Seattle listen to me.
You're still on the wheel.
Well, it's hard to let go.
Yeah, you know what'll help? Be sure to read the newspapers every day.
Why? I never paid attention to what they said about me. They had us written off weeks ago, and we lasted straight through till February.
I know, but after a while, you'll notice that there's nothing for you to not pay attention to, and that just lifts the burden right off of you.
Okay, Al. Well, look, good luck getting that BlackBerry synced up.
Huh? Right, yeah, it's a bitch not having that working.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, listen, you take care, and if you need anything, make sure you get it, because you have earned it, my friend.
Thank you, Al. God bless.
This is the Year in Rebuke, focusing on campaign 2004.
Abu Ghraib. 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 Rab. Ab. Rab. Ab. 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 Abu Ghraib. 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 Abu Gh
Stories never before told of a life bigger and bolder than the one that inspired it. These are Profiles in Carriage.
Now, you're sure we have the Distinguished Service Cross in-house? Because that's the one they're going to...
John, I just have a few minutes to spare.
Get back to me later, Spenno. Senator McCain, I appreciate you dropping by. Nobody saw you?
Like Steve told me, I used the secret entryway from Senator Lott's office.
This is such a nutty place, this old Senate. I'm going to miss it.
Well, not so fast there, mister. There is a little matter of an election, isn't there?
John, my friend, I got to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Unless they find Osama bin Laden in October and the place they find him is Hillary Clinton's residence, this election is a done deal. Mm-hmm. Now, I know some of my people like to worry about it from time to time, but I'll tell you this, John. Mm-hmm. If I were worried, I'd be making better speeches. You know that.
Well, sure. That's sort of what I wanted to talk to you about.
My speeches? Get in line, Senator.
No, sir. The election.
You don't mind if I play a little guitar?
No, I know you find it relaxing, unlike those of us who have to listen to it. But... John, I've thought long and hard about your proposal that I run for what you described as a supersized vice presidency.
Well, let's not misunderstand each other, John. I said you could be like a non-evil Dick Cheney running any and everything you wanted to.
I understand that, John, and I appreciate it.
And I understand and appreciate the fact that to maintain your credibility within your own party and to avoid being a complete pariah in your Senate caucus, you've had to... issue what sound like ringing and irrevocable denials of any interest in my offer. It's been utterly believable.
But now
it comes time to drop the charade and join the crusade to unseat the worst president of the United States since Benjamin Harrison.
Well, Harrison only served for about 100 hours, didn't he?
That's what I mean. This is worse because it's been longer.
Anyway, I just wanted to say ringingly and irrevocably... I'm rejecting your offer with total and complete gratitude.
John, you can't be serious.
If you saw my schedule, I'm on my way out to a campaign appearance with, with the worst president since Benjamin Harrison.
John?
John, I've said this until Larry King's blue in the face from hearing it. I'm not interested in being the vice president.
No, this isn't that old canard about the job not being worth a warm bucket of spit, is it? Because...
No, I know, supersized. Yeah. No, sir, I think it's more that being a senator agrees with me. I get to shoot off my mouth whenever I want to, and people listen to me, and I can still live a relatively normal life without all the... security distractions.
Oh, John, be serious now. Anyone who wanted a normal life wouldn't have gotten into public life to begin with. Which do you want to do, really? Help shape the future of your country or wait in the checkout line to buy some grow mulch at Home Depot?
Well, it wouldn't be a Gromulch back home where Zir escaping, but...
All right, well,
John, damn it. It really does come down to this. I was born a Republican. I spent 5 years in a Vietnamese prison camp being tortured as a Republican.
And you've been tortured as a Republican watching the guy you should have beaten try to govern for the last 3 years. Come on, our own commission has just concluded that these people didn't even know how to scramble jets on a day we were being attacked. Query whether they could have even scrambled eggs. I could make that pithier, but you know what I'm driving at here.
Yes, I do, John.
I mean, do you really think you would have continued reading to fifth graders while the nation was under attack? Do you think I would have?
Well, if you were serious about supersizing the vice presidency, of course you could have. I would have taken the reins until you got back. But look here, John.
Yeah.
There would have to be far more serious disagreements over fundamental issues for me to leave my party.
Well, but John, I hope you read the constitutional analysis we faxed over to you. You wouldn't have to stop being a Republican. I have a copy right here if you...
John, my friend, I hope you know me well enough to know that I spent one of those years in Vietnam memorizing the Constitution, so I know very well that a president and vice president can be at different parties, but... Realistically, were I to run as your vice president, I'd be about as welcome in the Republican Party as an Israeli at a Hezbollah picnic. I mean, I don't know if they actually have picnics in Hezbollah, but...
Well, you want a difference, my friend? Under a Kerry administration, we'd know something like that. We'd have intelligence that was, for lack of a different word, intelligent. I mean, John, my good friend, mm-hmm. Yes, we all supported the Iraq War for different reasons. You because you believe the president, and I because I believe, Tom Daschle, that we should get Iraq off the table so we could talk about prescription drug benefits for seniors. But obviously both of us would go about this next phase of the Iraq adventure differently than the current occupant. We'd go to the UN.
They just went to the UN.
We'd go more to the UN and better.
They got a unanimous resolution.
We'd get a bunch of them. Look, do you really want a front for an administration that thinks Ahmad Chalabi is a more reliable source than the 9/11 Commission?
Yeah, that whole Chalabi business gives me a certain amount of discomfort. Well, but on issues we can actually do something about, like taxes and abortion, this administration and I are on the same page. I'm sorry, my friend.
It would have been a great adventure.
Yeah, that it would.
I mean, obviously, I'm sad, even though there's a great wealth of vice presidential talent in my own party to choose from. I really did believe in the wisdom of this idea, and it wasn't even mine.
Mm.
And I did sort of promise my staff that I could deliver you. It's in a way, this undermines their faith in me.
Oh, look, I'm sure you'll make a fine vice presidential choice, and we'll beat the hell out of him and you for a few months, and you'll do the same to us at a slightly lower budget level.
I guess I know what this means. I really am going to have to start making better speeches.
I guess so. See you in January, my friend.
Use the front exit, Putz.
Even though he's looking straight at you, these are profiles in carriage.
Meanwhile, at Black Rock in New York.
Okay, I'm going to just put this marker down here. I know document examiners are all over the place on this one, and I believe you that ours are as good as anybody else's. So, with that in mind, please, why don't we try to just get some document examiners in here that might be better for television. I mean, CNN, ABC, they seem to be able to unearth some folks who actually don't twitch when they talk. All right, call me. Who is it?
Brother Wallace.
Mm-hmm. Who is it really?
Brother Wallace.
You sure this isn't a recreation of Brother Wallace, a hologram being faxed from the Abilene Kinkos?
I'm sure.
Come on in.
You sure I'm not bothering you? You don't want to eat your... What is that you're eating?
Takeout from the Four Seasons. This little container is the foie gras.
Okay.
I know you're more the takeout meatball kind of customer.
Hey, not only did the city apologize for the arrest of that little incident, mm-hmm. The deli apologized for the meatballs. So, Daniel, how goes it in the big trench?
Here's the thing that bugs me earth core deep, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't have even been doing this story. Yeah, I should have been covering Ivan. You know how that feels to miss out on maybe the last big hurricane of your career?
I wouldn't worry, Daniel. They're saying there'll be a lot more bad hurricanes next few years.
Global warming.
I think so. Well, I have to say, Daniel, you don't look like a worried man.
I'm not paid to look like a worried man, Hoss. I'm paid to do old-fashioned beat-your-shoe-leather to the pavement until it cries uncle-style reporting.
Well,
actually, I'm not. I'm paid to sit at the desk and read the news. But I'm not paid to look worried, unlike some of my unnamed colleagues.
Hey, pal, maybe they're afraid. Who knows? Maybe the Bush family owns part of Viacom. You know, just getting into the swim of the theorizing
I know.
Doesn't it seem the least bit suspicious that people were punching holes in your documents, metaphorically speaking, mm-hmm. just a couple of hours after you went off the air?
Maybe the Bush family has a mole in my shop. Maybe, to be fair, so does the Kerry operation.
All
just
right.
Trying to do what I've always done, Michael. Mm-hmm. Play it straight down the middle of the fairway. No hook, no slice.
Save it for the press conference, amigo. Your credibility is on the line.
Oh, look here, Hoss. My credibility has been on the line ever since I kissed goodbye to KRLD-TV Dallas. My credibility is on the line every time we do a reality check, an inside story, a money minute.
All right, then. The tattered remnant of what used to be the credibility of this organization's on the line.
Oh, I know it, Michael. But we've been there and done that. For a while, the whole of the Western world thought a certain Mike Wallace was full of Alar. You came back. We came back.
Those were different times, Daniel. Oh. Those were just apples. More importantly, I didn't have a target on my back for all Republicans to aim at since I left the Pecos.
Michael, how long have we known each other?
Few decades, give or take a few decades.
Mm-hmm. That's the first time I ever heard you pronounce the name of that river correctly, as if you don't buy your boots at Florsheim's.
Well.
But you...
You all right, Daniel? Daniel?
Yes.
Just a little clump of oyster ragu had caught in my windpipe there. No reason to call Dr. Heimlich.
All right.
But Brother Wallace,
mm-hmm.
when we reported this week that the documents may be inauthentic, but the story itself is rock solid and dead steer definite, you didn't believe that?
Daniel, there's a website called Rathergate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it. The man who rocketed to national prominence covering Watergate is now, himself, a gate.
Compadre, let's just send it down the flagpole a few feet here. Yes. You're not saying that because this story raises up some desert dust devils during election year that we shouldn't have covered it, are you?
No, I'm definitely not saying that. I don't even know what a desert dust...
All right, then, at least we're squatting at the same campfire.
I'm just saying, maybe an extra dollop of the old rather skepticism...
Oh, sir, please. Throughout this whole story, I've been more skeptical than a heifer at a cattle auction, but we would be shirking our obligation to voters if we waited to report this story until after the election, would we? Isn't that who our political coverage is supposed to serve?
I thought we were here to serve viewers.
Voters are viewers.
But not all viewers are voters.
Well, maybe that's part of our world, part of our job, to help turn viewers into voters.
Well, if what Drudge says about your ratings is true, some of your viewers have already voted.
Brother Wallace, I don't know. Maybe I was injected at birth with bulldog DNA, but this is a story we worked long and hard to get our teeth into, and I see no reason not to give it a good shaking until and unless we've got diamond-hard proof, court case clear and car crash conclusive, that these documents came from, I guess you'd have to call it, the counterfeit file. And if and when that happens, we're going to be bulldog tough on that angle, too. Can't help it, Hoss. It's the way I'm hardwired. In the meantime, I'm going to hunker down in here and enjoy what's left of my cowboy steak.
The Four Seasons has something called cowboy steak?
It's just their pepper steak with some hot sauce on it.
Oh. Look, Daniel, I guess my point is simply, we're all concerned for you. Even if you're not concerned for you or about you.
Michael, you think I haven't applied the backside of my good side to the members of my team, what few of them are left? Look, compadre, you know as well as I do, 20 years ago
We had the budget to consult all the document experts in the country, and as well as having the people to read their reports. Now we're trying to do first-class journalism from way back in the economy cabin. We're riding on intern labor, my friend. Mm-hmm. Not copying any kind of plea here. It's just as Uncle Walter used to say, that it's just that's the way it is.
I know, Daniel, but faxes from the Abilene Kinkos.
Michael, hear this and hear this well. Don't jump to conclusions just yet, please, partner. We're deep into finding out for 24-carat sure whether or not Abilene has a second Kinkos. I seem to think it does.
All right, Daniel. Well, if there's anything I can do or say or not do or say, be sure to let me know.
Hoss, I appreciate it, but this you can take down to the Mint and print money on. Dan Rather doesn't sacrifice a good hurricane story for a bad politics story. That dog don't hunt.
Okay, Brother Rather. Good luck.
They don't let me say it on the air anymore, Michael, but courage. You want some plum mousse for the road?
No, thanks. Good night.
And then there were the debates.
In Iraq, no doubt about it, it's tough. It's hard work. It's incredibly hard. You know why? Because an enemy realizes the stakes. The enemy understands a free Iraq will be a major defeat in their ideology of hatred. That's why they're fighting so vociferously. Vociferously. There's a lot of good people working hard. I work with Director Mueller of the FBI. He comes in my office when I'm in Washington every morning talking about how to protect us. There's a lot of really good people working hard to do so. It's hard work. I thought we would they would stay and fight, but they didn't, and now we're fighting them now. It's hard work. I understand how hard it is. I get the casualty reports every day. I see on the TV screens how hard it is, but it's necessary work. The plan says we'll train Iraqi soldiers so they can do the hard work, and we are. We're making progress. It is hard work. It is hard work to go from a tyranny to a democracy. It's hard work to go from a place where people get their hands cut off or executed to a place where people are free. But it's necessary work. I think about Missy Johnson, as a fantastic young lady I met in Charlotte, North Carolina. She and her son Brian. They came to see me. Her husband, PJ, got killed. Been in Afghanistan, went to Iraq. It's hard work to try to love her as best as I can, knowing full well that the decision I made caused her loved one to be in harm's way. We're getting the job done. It's hard work. Everybody knows it's hard work because there's a determined enemy that's trying to defeat us. Understand how hard it is to commit troops. We've done a lot of hard work together over the last 3.5 years.
Clinton something, the Harlem Years.
Been on there for about 10 minutes now, Mr. President.
I know it, James.
Yeah, well, no need to overdo it.
I overdo everything else.
Yeah, well,
that's who I am. You ought to know that by now.
Maybe so, but after a quadruple bypass, even a fat ass Cajun cuts back on a fried cheesecake.
Fried cheesecake.
Mm-hmm.
James, that's not real.
That's as real as a heart, as a nutria's smile, Mr. President. You know, I could take you to a place just outside Lafayette that serves 100 orders of fried cheesecake a night.
Wow. I thought we ate crap in Little Rock. Anyway, man, these kinds of experiences don't change you. You know, if they did, Larry King would never set foot in a Jewish deli again.
Yeah, maybe they got a diet bagel going on. Anyway, Mr. President, let me get my business done here. We just got to record this robocall message, and then, you know, I promised Brother Begala I'd get you to sign off on the battleground state visits.
Well, Hillary only wants me to do Pennsylvania, Florida, and New Mexico.
Yes, sir. And Senator Kerry wants you to go every place except Guam. So, you know, somewhere in the middle there is where we got to land this thing.
Hey, you know, speaking of Brother Begala, nice the way he hid in the tall grass when John Stewart was dumping on Crossfire.
Yeah, well, it's like I always said about my former partner. He's the kind of guy you want next to you in a foxhole because while you're shooting, you know, he's down there digging a deeper foxhole. Yeah. You okay, sir? Sir?
Yeah, I just gotta be careful. Like the doctor said, you know, just laugh when something is really funny, but it's hard, you know, man?
Hardest thing for somebody in our business.
No, hardest thing is the other advice the doctor gave me. Don't shake hands.
Yeah, right. I can just see you down in Florida. Hey, nice to see you. If you want to shake somebody's hand, Hiller will be around here in about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
So that wasn't really funny?
Look, let's do the math here, James. If I really want to do something for the next 4 years, other than carry the old lady's suitcases around on her campaign swings, I got to just strap it on and start pushing. I mean, let's face it, bud, leak or no leak, I ain't going to be Secretary General of the United Doodly Squad if George W. smirks his way back in.
Hey, listen, Mr. President, you know, speaking just as a Crossfire co-host, you taking on a full schedule in the last week of the campaign would be, you know, the best October surprise since the Red Sox beat the Yankees.
That was just a few days ago.
Been a good October.
Yeah.
Mr. President, I'm just calling to check in with you, see if you had any new thoughts or any addenda to thoughts you've previously shared with me on the telephone at times like these.
It's Kerry. Hey, John, how's it going out there?
Well, that's what I thought you might want to share with me, Mr. President. I mean, the crowds are great. I did as you suggested and cut my daily staff meetings down to 2 hours, and it's really helped focus the days.
That's great, John. But look, man, I think it's safe to say that everybody in the country knows by now that you have a plan. You gotta put a mute in that, don't you think?
Sir, as we discussed previously, that's what focus groups said repeatedly over the summer was the one thing they were waiting to hear from me, whether I had a plan to deal with health care, or a plan to deal with the economy, or a plan to deal with Iraq.
Well, if they're still waiting, they're out of focus groups. Listen, man, I'm also hearing that Shrum stuff coming back into your speeches, the people versus the powerful stuff. That, besides Al Gore, is what killed Al Gore.
Again, sir, Bob has figures indicating that with undecided voters, this is the sort of thing that tests through, not necessarily the roof, but at least through the acoustical ceiling of the metaphorical cubicle in question.
Well, on both points, man, I just have to say, you're shooting straight on when you should be banking them in, you know? Go off the backboard. You can still score, but, you know, you're coming from that easier, more attractive angle.
And that means what exactly?
Hey, John, good news. I'm feeling pretty damn great right now, so, and I guess it's okay to tell you before we make it official. I'm signing up for all the appearances next week. Full slate. Bring it on, as I once heard somebody say.
That's great, Mr. President. That's the best news I've heard since, well, since the Red Sox beat the Yankees.
That was just a few days ago.
Well, there hasn't been that much other good news.
Yeah.
All right, sir, I'm very much looking forward to your infusion of energy, of your special gift for communication, and I know you're sacrificing what should still be your recuperation period,
well,
but I'm one who looks on the bright side of the penny or the other particular coin, and I understand that The UN has one hell of a health plan for its executives and other members of the Secretariat.
I've heard the same thing, except without the excess verbiage at the end. I'll talk to you soon, Senator.
Goodbye, Mr. President, and that is indeed my salutation of farewell to you, sir.
Okay, then.
You sort of made the decision right on the phone, sir.
Yeah, James, I guess I did.
The missus is going to want to know what happened.
Yeah, I guess she is.
What are you going to tell her?
Straight up?
Yeah.
James, the advice wasn't taken. You know, I figured maybe he can pick something up by osmosis.
You better get back on that machine.
No kidding.
Youthful angst and middle-aged powerlessness. Together, they add up to Clinton something. The Harlem Years.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, closing out the year in rebuke, the year-end apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
This is Bernie Kerik's weekly entry into the press. Former New York Police Commissioner and one-time cabinet nominee Bernard Kerik said this week he will leave Giuliani Partners, former Mayor Rudolph Giuliani's consulting firm. Kerik said he had apologized to Giuliani for being a distraction because of his messy withdrawal as a candidate to head Homeland Security. He said his resignation would be effective immediately. He would seek other unspecified business opportunities, and he did not take questions from reporters nor from known mobsters. By the way, just a piece of advice if you're going to appoint somebody as head of Homeland Security, two K's in the name mean trouble or comedy. Dateline Athens, two Albanian hijackers who held 23 passengers hostage in an Athens bus apologized to the Greek people in court this week, saying it was a stupid act, a quote Bernie Kerik should be adopting. And may yet, under pressure from city officials, the chief of police of San Fernando, California, formally apologized for ordering a police clerk to remove a menorah during the height of the Jewish celebration of Hanukkah. Mayor Maribel Della Torre said the clerk was allowed to put the menorah back on display near her desk. Welcome the gesture by Police Chief Anthony Alba. And where is Bill O'Reilly when we need him? The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, in the spirit of good fellowship, I doubt there'll be enough human folly for me to do a show next week, but who am I kidding? The show returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the East Coast via the shortwave giant WBCQ The Planet. Around the world via your computer at two different locations, harryshear.com and kcrw.com. On Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 108, and as a free download at www.audible.com/listshow. And it'll be just like being a year older if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show internet services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks. The show playlists, when there's music, are available at harryshearer.com. Thanks to everybody we met on the tour. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world, now more than ever, as the home of the homeless.